Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio broadcast feature of ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I'm talking with Joe Tigan, author of the thought-provoking sports novel, Waggle. Joe was born in DeKalb, Illinois, the youngest of seven children. Shortly after he was born, their family relocated to Vallejo, California, where Joe spent most of his childhood until he was 12 years old. The family then returned to the northern Illinois area, settling in St. Charles, which he now considers a western suburb of Chicago and his home. After attending several colleges that included the University of St. Francis, Northern Illinois University, and University of Copenhagen in Denmark, Joe eventually graduated with a BA degree from University of Massachusetts in Amherst. He focused on literature and journalism and later attended Illinois State University, where he received a fellowship to study creative writing in the Graduate Creative Writing Program. At that time, the creative writing faculty at ISU included David Foster Wallace, Curtis White, and C.S. Giscombe. Joe has had poetry published in the High Plains Literary Review and other literary journals. His first novel, Waggle, was published in March of this year, 2007, and Joe currently lives in Chicagoland. We are so delighted to have Joe at Inside Scoop Live today and would like to welcome him. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you very much, Juanita. I'm happy to be here.
Great. We are so excited to have the opportunity to talk with you about Waggle. It's receiving some very, very great reviews.
It is. I'm very happy with the response it's been receiving so far. It's only been out for about 4 weeks, but what I hear back is it's very positive. I'm very happy about it.
Great. That's a great testament. So I have to ask you, in your bio that I just read, it says that you're currently residing in Chicagoland. I have never been to the Illinois area, so I'm assuming that that is another name for Chicago.
It is. It's what locals around here refer to both Chicago and the sort of network of suburbs that kind of casts around at least a 30-mile radius. So It's Chicago, if you ever come here, and I recommend it, you'll find out one of the first things people will tell you is that it's a city of neighborhoods.
Okay.
So it's broken down into several different kinds of neighborhoods, and then that reaches out into sort of the suburban area as well, so we kind of call it Chicagoland.
So what would the population be of that whole area?
You know, I think it's, I want to say it's around 5 million. That would be the city and the suburban area. It could be more at this point, but I think it's in that general area.
Huge.
Yeah. I mean, it's a sprawling, as you read my book, it's sprawling ever faster. So where I live was once considered a farm town that was about 40 miles west of Chicago, and now it's just considered a western suburb of the city.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So your new novel, you have decided to write a very socially conscious novel centered around golf. Why don't you tell your listeners about your history with the sport and if you still play and how often?
Oh, I do play a lot. I wish I could play more. Work gets in the way, as we all know.
Sure.
But I started playing golf as a little kid when we were in California. My dad would take me and my brother to the driving range. I was probably 6 or 7 years old. That's kind of how it started. And I just loved it. I loved it from the start. When I was 12, I started caddying. We had just moved here to the Chicago area, and I started caddying at St. Charles Country Club. And once I got big enough to actually carry a bag.
Yeah, that's pretty young.
Yeah, and I don't know if they still do that. If they took kids that young at that time, though.
But
once I got a little bigger, I actually kind of enjoyed it, because by that time I had a real love for the game. And when I was 18, it would have been the summer after I graduated high school. During that year, I was selected to be a caddy from that club to caddy in the Western Open, which is, next to the U.S. Open, is the second oldest golf tournament in the U.S.
That's an honor.
Yeah, it was. Unfortunately, that's another thing that they don't do anymore. They the players just have to have their own caddies. And at the time, it was the only stop on tour where local kids became the caddies. And it's kind of unfortunate that they don't do that anymore. But I'm lucky I got in when I did, and it was unbelievable.
Great.
Yeah. And I play. I still play as much as I can today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fabulous game.
Yeah.
So your writing history to this point, before this novel, has actually been focused on poetry?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
I started getting positive feedback for my poetry as an undergrad out at UMass. And I had taken I was an English and journalism major, so one of the classes I got into was an Emily Dickinson seminar. And, at the time I was going in because it was a requirement to take it, and I just kind of fell in love with it immediately. And because we were in Amherst, we were able to benefit from her having lived there. And so we had a few of our classes in her home. And things kind of took off from there, and I started writing, and I got really good feedback from it. And but Waggle is kind of a first attempt at a novel. I've had, short fiction that was well received in the past, and I don't know. Waggle, I do stream a lot of social consciousness through the novel.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, maybe I'm at a time in life where I want to, instead of just sit down and write, to hear myself,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to kind of say something to the general community.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to communicate with them. I don't want to be sort of in an ivory tower where it's really difficult to figure out what I'm saying.
Mm.
But that it's just, I myself, having just recently turned 40, found that at this time, there's things that I would like to do in my community. It's an affluent community that I live in.
Mm-hmm.
And people do have that trait of, complaining about the state of affairs, and, you name it, there's something to complain about, and then they just don't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they expect it to go away. And that's not really going to happen, so... the impetus for Waggle was that I had an idea, and for such a long time I would kind of, have ideas and let them go because I didn't want to do the work of the writing. And I decided I wasn't going to let this idea go away. And really it was an idea that, okay, nobody wants to do anything about it. What if you had these guys out on a golf course, and one of them just finally says, look, if you lose a bet, you have to run for city council. Or if you lose this bet, you have to help clean up the river that runs through town with your son's Cub Scout den.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. And what would it take to get these guys to kind of get involved in their community?
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that I don't want it to sound preachy or anything, but the book really isn't like that. One of the things I wanted to avoid was getting on some kind of soapbox. That's not at all what Waggle is about. It's about it's just about the human condition as it takes place sort of in an affluent suburb of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And that these guys, even though they're well-to-do and life is easy, they're still prone to, a conscience. And this takes over the lead character of the book, and he's trying to convince his friends, hey, don't you think, we're turning 40 here, isn't there more to it than selling real estate and playing golf as much as we can?
Sure. So you're getting right into the storyline here. So please do set it up. Give your listeners an idea of where this takes place and
okay.
the day and the characters?
Sure. It's it takes place on a single day, sort of. I do use some sort of historical accounts of these guys to kind of give them some character development. But
okay.
it takes place on July 28th, 2003. Mm-hmm. And at that time, at least in this area, and I'm pretty sure across the country, you know, the real estate boom was just at its zenith.
Yeah.
And I know that people were just, they were just downright frightened by the amount of land that was being taken up so quickly.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the time frame for the book. And these guys, there's four main characters, and there's sort of a leader of that foursome. His name is Connie Broman. And he's, you know, he's feeling this sort of strange feeling that can overcome you when you've lived in a town for, let's say, 20 to 30 years. You know, you went to high school there back in the 80s. And suddenly, I mean, you're okay with the fact that, yes, the population is growing, but they're just taking up hundreds of thousands of acres.
Mm-hmm.
And without regard for anything except, you know, to make money off the development. Mm-hmm. And now, you know I'm not the first author to sort of approach that subject, and that isn't the entire crux of the novel, but that is, I want to bring that in as something that's kind of already happened. The book isn't about that happening. That has already happened.
Okay.
And Connie is, you know, kind of between that and turning 40, he's wondering, you know, are we really headed in the right direction here? So I kind of use an inordinately beautiful day in late July in Chicago, which is usually 100 degrees and 100% humidity.
Wow.
And this day is just ridiculously nice. It's 72 degrees. There's no humidity, you know, blue skies.
Mm-hmm.
And so this fresh breeze kind of comes in, and it gives him sort of an injection of personal awareness. It allows him to kind of focus more than usual. And he begins to kind of, you know, think about things that he could be doing with his life that kind of involve community involvement.
Mm-hmm.
What he wants to do is he wants to set up a tea time for that morning, get his buddies out there. He's mulling over the idea of trying to get them involved as well, but he knows that it's risky. He doesn't want to come off as being, oh, you know, this is a midlife crisis is one term.
Sure.
Or this is, you know, Connie's finally lost it. You know, he wants to celebrate Earth Day. Okay, let's scratch Connie off the list.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to risk that. A couple of these friends he's had, you know, almost his whole life, so... and they are all in the real estate game. They've made their money this way, and you know, it's just one of those things. He's run through the routine. He's taken a look around. He feels like he wants to do something about it. He can't do it alone. Nobody can. He's going to try to convince his buddies. They get to the golf course. This beautiful day keeps just, you know, washing them in this kind of, you know, incredible focus and attention and just sort of general awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to seize that opportunity to say, you know, instead of betting our usual bet, which in golf it's called a Nassau, and it's pretty basic. There's a bet for who wins the front nine, there's a bet for who wins the back nine, and a bet for who wins the total 18. Well, he, instead of making this for money, he's got an idea to make it for pacts, obligations, things that they agree upon that they'll do if they lose the bet. So it's in one way. I had a friend tell me who just read it. He said, you know, in a way, this is kind of a book form way of saying the only way I would ever do it was if I lost a bet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. And so there's kind of a bittersweet sentiment there. It's like, okay, these guys kind of want to get involved, but look what it takes. to get them involved. I mean, these guys have to lose a bet.
Yeah, that's quite a statement.
Yeah, and it's that's kind of that's the general setup, and you know, a lot of the book takes place out on the golf course. There's a lot of kind of demented descriptions of the golf swing, how certain golf bets are constructed. What I really love about the feedback that I've been getting this early on is that, you know, I've had a couple people say, you know, I've seen this thing guised as a golf sports book, and it's really, that's not what they got out of it. And I love that, because I want it to be considered general fiction.
Okay.
But I know that I need to start with a core audience, and that would be, you know, people who understand golf, or you can't miss with them on this book. But I really like the people who aren't golfers that come back and say, you know, I love this book.
They get the bigger picture of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think even with the Reader Views reviewer, Cherie, she even said, you know, you don't have to be an avid golfer to love this book, and I was so glad to hear her say that.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, you've really tapped into a very wide audience with your book.
I hope so.
Absolutely. So, Connie's Golf Buddies, you've obviously been on the course quite a bit.
Right.
You have golf buddies yourself. Are readers going to recognize them as real-life composites of people you would typically find on a suburban golf course?
You know, they should recognize these guys. They should, not in themselves, but, you know, I think anybody would recognize who these guys are.
Mm-hmm.
They don't reflect people I actually know. And a couple of my buddies who have read the book, it's funny, they'll say, now, you know, Connie, who is that? I don't know who that would be. Like, they just want to immediately say, hey, that's Jim, right? And no, it's not. You know, it's hard to explain to, well, they didn't know I was writing a book either. So that, it doesn't help that they didn't know that I was sort of into this process. So when it came out, it's kind of a lot to explain this is a fictional process. You know, it's hard to say, you know, this isn't really, these are people I totally created. And I use some broad strokes. I mean, they have weaknesses that are applicable to all of us.
Okay.
They're, you know, they have needs and desires, but at the same time, they have very, very sort of intricate personalities of their own. And that was the area that surprised me most about my fiction writing. Was that I was really able to hone in on personalities that I don't have any basis for. You know, I don't know them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea where they came from.
Huh.
So I think that's, you know, hopefully that's, and that's the fun part for me. I mean, that's where the real fun came in.
That's fiction writing.
Totally.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just kind of reporting what you already see.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of characters, the golf course, I really would love to hear the story of the golf course in your novel, because it really almost is a character unto itself. So please tell us about Triple the Pines.
Okay. Well, Triple the Pines is, in many ways, it's sort of a conglomerate of courses that are here in the Chicagoland area. But it's also got a few tricks up its sleeve. The golf course is a very defensive person in my mind. Triple the Pines is, you know, trying to defend itself against everything. It's trying to defend itself particularly against golf technology, which is just out of control right now. I mean, it's embarrassing. If anybody's been playing golf for at least, you know, 20 years, to see what they come out with for equipment right now, and I won't go on too long about golf technology, but it's just really unbelievable.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, guys are hitting golf balls 350 yards and not not batting an eye. And, you know, guys from the past like Nicholas or Tom Watson or whoever must look at it and go, that just simply is not right.
Wow. So it's just new, just the technology, the new equipment, all of that is creating a completely different twist on the sport?
Totally. It's and maybe not a very good one.
Oh, okay.
So one of the things that I kind of allude to in the book is that, you know, if they keep doing this, you know, we're running out of land.
Oh.
You know, you can't. Golf courses are generally about 7,000 yards.
Oh, know? Because they can hit the ball so much farther. Okay.
Yes. So, you know, you can't build a 9,000-yard golf course around here because you just don't have the space anymore.
Right.
So, but Triple the Pines is a relatively modern course. It was built about 20 years ago. And so but it was also kind of preserved by its founders, you know, in a patch of land that was formerly a pine tree farm. And so Triple the Pines that name should indicate sort of the direction that the book takes. It's kind of on one hand, it's kind of a ridiculous name, but on the other hand, if you know golf, for some strange reason, it doesn't sound crazy.
Mm-hmm. It fits.
Right. You know, they carved it out of a pine tree farm, so there's all these pine trees and all the challenges therein. And there is a greenskeeper in the book, and he is also trying to fend off golf technology. But the book, each chapter introduces a hole from Triple the Pines and does so in terms that are, if you read descriptions of golf courses or golf holes, you know that they can get kind of flowery with their language.
Mm-hmm.
this is kind of an antidote to that.
Okay.
Okay, so, and that's how, and after, and readers have told me this, after they get through like six or seven chapters and they realize what's going on with the beginning of each chapter, they do find that the course takes on sort of this personality.
Okay.
So they, and you know, I was hoping that would happen. I also wanted to give readers a map of what's going on the golf course.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Before I forget to ask you, what does waggle mean?
Waggle is, if you ever watch golf and you see a guy, he just stands over the ball. He gets over the ball. And then he kind of waggles the club a little bit. He maybe waggles his hips a little bit.
Okay, yes.
He's trying to get comfortable before he swings.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's known as a waggle.
Okay, makes
so
sense.
It's there's a again Cherie the reviewer had found a definition that was perfect. I mean, you know, you're addressing the ball, you swing the club in sort of a practice way a few times. You can wiggle your legs and hips and arms and just sort of generally get comfortable and then get set to swing away. And that's what a waggle is.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you, you spend a lot of time in your book revolving around the theme of walking and the course and the almost zen-like aura. Mm-hmm. About it. Can you talk a little bit about that and how this lends itself so well to the personal awareness that Connie
sure
receives?
Yeah, it's, you know, I love to walk when I play golf, and there's a lot of guys that, unfortunately, they take carts because, I mean, there's a lot of guys that think that's just what you do. And they even build golf courses now that don't allow walking. You have
Oh, you've got to be kidding.
No, it's very strange. So the walking, I mean, when you walk 18 holes, you've probably walked anywhere between 4 and 5 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And you're carrying your bag or pulling it. So there's, you know, with any form of meditation, whether it's Zen-like meditation, what have you, there's yoga. There's usually, you know, a physical exercise involved. And walking 5 miles over, 4 hours is going to give you that opportunity. It's going to give you the time. It's going to give you the deep breathing. It's going to give you the exercise, the fresh air. You're on a golf course, which even the lowest-priced local muni golf course is going to be surrounded by nature. And right. So it's just sort of this perfect environment to sort of get back to yourself. I suppose an overused term would be commune with nature.
Mm-hmm.
But, self-reflection, it's perfect for it.
Absolutely.
And you can even get, you can get 3 or 4 guys together, which normally isn't very productive, I have to admit. But you can get them together and out on this expansive golf course. And because of the walking 5 miles, because of the time, because of the fresh air, because of the natural surroundings, they will commune. And, you see a foursome who's walked it coming off of 18. They are oddly in sync with each other at that point. They won't start out that way,
mm-hmm.
but they'll come off that way.
That really is fascinating because
yeah.
it's true.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from my own personal experience, I chalk that up to, the walking, which gets kind of these days, it kind of gets ignored as being kind of the heart of the game.
Wow. Yeah, that hopefully there's a turnaround and that does come back. The importance of that aspect will come back.
I certainly hope so.
Absolutely. So Connie being a catalyst for the change that he wants to see, that being a catalyst for his friends, do you think, is this a statement, your own statement about how you think this type of awareness will come in the suburban communities? Do you think it's going to come internally?
I think, realistically speaking, I would have to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that you can force someone to do something that they don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, the kinds of things that I bring up in the book, whether it is sort of, if it's something like running for city council, if it's something like working to preserve, the environment around the town, any of those things, whether it's community involvement or self-improvement, those are things really you have to have an inner voice telling you. That's just my opinion.
Yes.
I've never been swayed to do anything by anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, Waggle is kind of an answer to that for me personally, because I've had kind of a history of getting very positive feedback on my writing, and then I won't do anything with it.
Okay.
And this goes back to high school. And finally I just kind of said, look, you either need to do something with this or you don't. And so it took me until I was approaching 40 before I did anything about it. And the only reason I did is it was completely an inner voice that was telling me now is the time.
So there was almost a inner change in you that inspired the book about inner change.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. And, you do have to be close to the subject matter you're going to write about.
Absolutely.
So, and that's what I was feeling. I've loved golf my whole life. I thoroughly enjoy the community I live in, but I fear the direction it's taking. I wanted to do something about that, and I thought, well, what's my strength? I mean, I can't just come out and run for city council. Who's Joe Tigan?
Right.
So I thought, well, writing. Mm-hmm. You know, if I go ahead and devote my time to writing this book, maybe that's something.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ideas that is in the book is that if one of the guys loses a bet, he has to start a website that only reports good news. So and he's like, you know, all of these ideas are Connie's, and they're usually met with disdain. So he says, yeah, you know, you'll have to put together a website, but it only reports good news. And he's like, only good news. And, you know, this it gets fleshed out. That is an idea that I would be happy to take on myself.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
maybe invent a content management filter that pulls only the good.